are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon, and I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy post-Thanksgiving weekend. If you're Black Friday shopping or regular old weekending as we bide our time together waiting for Wolves Grizzlies on Sunday afternoon, thanks for listening. It is a weird, rare three-day layoff for the Wolves in the middle of the season, a non-All-Star break three-day layoff. The Wolves haven't played since Wednesday night, and they don't play until Sunday afternoon when they have a matinee against the Memphis Grizzlies. The Wolves definitely could use the break to get a few injuries healed up, but I'm not sure that a break at home post-Thanksgiving, 3 days, is really the best thing for a team that had a nice win in Atlanta on Monday, an impressive win in San Antonio on Wednesday, and had a bit of momentum going. It's perhaps not the best timing, and the idea of a Sunday matinee a couple days after Thanksgiving could be pretty sleepy in the Target Center on Sunday. So here's hoping that that's not the case. But anyways, today we're going to talk about the win over the Spurs on Wednesday. We did not have an episode on Thanksgiving on Thursday, so this is our first episode since Wednesday night's win. We'll talk briefly about that game in our first segment, and then we'll spend the next portion of the show singing Karl Anthony Towns praises, expanding a little bit on what we talked about Wednesday related to his crazy start to the season and everything he's been bringing to the table thus far. We simply can't do that enough, so we'll spend a few moments talking about Towns, and then we'll have a quick look ahead to Wolves Grizzlies, which is Sunday afternoon's tilt the next time that the Timberwolves will take the floor. All right, let's talk about Wolves Spurs. So it was a good performance against a struggling team. The Spurs are now, I think, 1-10 in their last 11 games. They've lost, I believe, 7 in a row at this point. And that dates back. Seven out of eight. They had only won one game since the Wolves and Spurs played 2 weeks ago, and that was against the Knicks. Clearly, this is a team that the Wolves are better than. So I don't want to go overboard and talking about how good of a win it was. I noticed on NBA TV afterwards, the crew on there was talking about how this could be a season-defining win for the Timberwolves and all this stuff about winning on the road at San Antonio because the franchise hadn't won there in 11 tries dating back to Rick Adelman in, I think it was 2013. And that's true, and it's certainly, you know, there's some truth to the franchise being just bested by San Antonio in every way, dating back to the struggles the battles that Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett had with one another. The Spurs have just always, you know, they defeated the Wolves in the first round of the playoffs a couple of times when they had those 7 or 8 straight exits in the late 90s, early 2000s. Obviously, these are, you know, there's no players on the current roster that were on the team the last time they won there. And so it's just, I guess maybe Gorgui Dieng was probably the only one, but that's like, it doesn't matter. This isn't season defining. The Spurs are not good. They maybe will end up being a 500-ish team, best case scenario. So I don't want to get too worked up about it, but it was still an impressive performance. The Spurs really struggled to guard Karl Anthony Towns early in the game. They gave up a couple of threes to him. After the second one, I think Jakob Poeltl, he started in this game after not having started the last time these teams matched up, and Poeltl's the right choice to start from a defensive perspective, but he, you know, I mean, and really nobody can stick with Towns all over the court. And so he gave up a couple of early threes to Towns. Greg Popovich, the Spurs coach, called a timeout in a fit of rage and said, basically, don't let that guy shoot a three the rest of the game. And then Towns didn't make another three until late in the game. And I guess it was early in the fourth quarter. He knocked on a three and Poeltl fouled him. So Towns got a 4-point play, but he did only make three threes on the night. So the Spurs were effective in slowing Towns down from outside the arc during the middle stages of the game, really the second quarter through the first part of the fourth quarter. However, making sure that Towns was guarded closely on the perimeter opened up passing lanes to cutters. Towns finished with 6 assists in this game. It also opened up driving lanes for the likes of Andrew Wiggins, who had a great performance, 26 points on 7 of 16, 3 of 5 from beyond the arc himself. He had 8 rebounds, couple blocks, couple assists, and only one turnover for Andrew Wiggins. I've talked about this several times. I don't love single game plus minus marks, but Andrew was a plus 26 in this game. The next best Timberwolf was a plus 13, and that was Gorgui Dieng off the bench. Covington was a plus 10. Most of the rest of the players most of the rest of the Wolves players were positives in plus minus. Towns, Travion Graham even. But Wiggins at a plus 26, twice as good as any other Timberwolf is, I think, significant enough to mention, to be sure. So all that to say, the Spurs did a good job of limiting Towns from outside the arc early, and that was a clear, concerted effort on their part after Towns hit a couple of early threes. But then Wiggins was an issue for them. The Timberwolves ended up, after a back-and-forth first quarter, the Wolves were much better than the Spurs in the second quarter, had a 10-point lead at halftime. Things fell apart for Minnesota in the third frame when there was a series of bad calls. There was a Robert Covington, an out-of-bounds play that Covington felt should have been called off the Spurs, plus DeMar DeRozan pushed Covington kind of in the throat area, and you could see Covington was upset about that. No foul was called, and the ball was given to the Spurs. And then the next time down the floor on that same end, or I guess the very next time down the floor, down on the Timberwolves end, Towns was grabbed by a couple players on the arm. No foul was called. The Spurs stole the ball. And then coming back the other way, Covington had a clean strip, knocked the ball off. I think it was DeRozan again, knocked the ball off his knee, went out of bounds, and they called a foul on Covington. Covington got a technical for reacting immediately and demonstrably. And then the following time down the court, Towns went to throw down a dunk, and I can't remember who actually took the charge, but over a Spurs defender, and was called for it was an awesome dunk. It should have still made highlight reels, even though it was ultimately an offensive foul. Towns made the dunk, and then would have had an and one had they called a blocking foul. Instead, they called a charge. It actually looked to be the proper call. There was enough contact. The player was set. He was outside the charge arc there. It was the right call. So Towns got a technical, and it was actually a little surprising he wasn't ejected with how aggressively he went after the official. And then while the Spurs had the ball on offense on the other end of the floor, Ryan Saunders got a technical. So there were three technicals in about a minute or less on basically four back and forth possessions that the Wolves felt like they got jobbed on. I think three of them, they were right. The Towns one, I think, was the only one that was a correct call. And it was just disappointing because it was such an incredible dunk. And typically on those plays, they give the offense the benefit of the doubt because it's such a spectacular play. But in this case, the call went against the Wolves. Things, you know, it got down to, I think, a 2-point game, maybe 3-point game. And then the Wolves pushed it back up to multiple possessions early in the fourth quarter. So they kind of withstood that emotional spiral that they were on and did a really good job kind of combating that. And then in the fourth quarter, Towns was going to go to the free throw line. Popovich challenged the call of a block charge or challenged the blocking call. It was changed to a charge. It was Towns' fifth personal. There was about 8 minutes left in the game. So Towns went to the bench. And then while he was on the bench, the Spurs took a brief lead. And if you're a Wolves fan that's watched any number of games really ever prior to the season, you would just assume the Wolves would lose that game on the road in San Antonio, leading the whole game basically. Now they're losing. Towns on the bench, five fouls. But the Wolves called a timeout, came out. Covington hit a three. Then Wiggins hit a three. Kata Bates-Diop hit a big three, and then Okogie hit a couple of threes down the stretch. Towns came back in the game, played well down the stretch as well, and the Wolves put it away. And it was three-point shooting that really did it, and their stick-to-itiveness on that in that aspect of the offensive game. They launched 40 threes in this game and made 18, which is 45%. And this is a team that's been hovering around that 31% mark almost every night. But huge threes from all of those guys. Wiggins, Covington didn't have a great game, but he had a big three that helped the Wolves get back on top. And then Okogie. Kata Bates-Diop was massive again. 16 points, 4 of 6 from beyond the arc, 4 rebounds in 26 minutes. He kind of split time at the four with Robert Covington for most of this game. Jordan Bell played a few minutes there, and Gorgie primarily backed up Towns and played extremely well again also. But Kata Bates-Diop and Robert Covington sharing minutes as the four is a really interesting thing that is working. And now Noah Vonleh's had three, did not play coach's decisions in a row. So this might be a thing moving forward, at least for the near future. So all things considered, it was a really nice win given the adversity of the third quarter. The Wolves falling behind briefly in the fourth. Towns foul trouble. Wiggins played great. Towns was very good. Kata Bates-Diop was very good. Josh Okogie had 11 and 8 rebounds. Gorgie had 10 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists in just 16 minutes off the bench, and it was a huge part of holding things down when Towns was in foul trouble. Really, really just a nice win for the Wolves. And it pushes them to 10-8. It gives them a little bit of breathing room in terms of the playoff race and also staying above 500 and also winning both games against the Spurs. Should the Spurs get hot, could help in terms of a tiebreaker as we get closer to playoff time. So positive all the way around, to be sure. All right, next up, we're going to talk a little bit about Karl-Anthony Towns and what he has been doing so far this year in terms of league-wide context and also a little bit of a historical context as well. This being a Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, of course, means it's a pro Karl-Anthony Towns podcast in every way possible. But I don't think that we can spend enough time talking about just how unique Towns has been this year. And now that we're basically very close to the quarter pole of the season, I think that it's time to call for a little bit more national attention to the shooting season that Karl-Anthony Towns is having. I get that we're still, you know, it's still a small sample size territory in some respects, but it's not like Towns is shooting 60% from beyond the arc. He's shooting a very realistic 44.4%, realistic in that it's not far off of his career average. Unrealistic in that it's just insane for anybody of his size to be shooting threes with the frequency and accuracy that he is. It's not the only way that he's improved this year, but it is the way that the thing that I'm going to spend the most time talking about. We mentioned this a little bit on Wednesday's episode, and I'm going to give another shout out to our to a writer over at Dunking with Wolves, the fan-sided website that I'm one of the co-editors for. Jack Borman's one of our great contributors, and he did an awesome job putting together an article about the great, good, bad, and ugly so far for the Timberwolves. And of course, the greatest Karl-Anthony Towns in it. Jack calls him the most offensively skilled big man ever, and I think we're about at the point where that's not hyperbole. I think we're pretty much there, considering that he's a top two or three guy in the post. When he actually gets the ball on the low block, he's easily the best long range shooting big man. And we know he can score in the mid range if he wanted to. He can also handle the ball on the open floor. He's not exactly Giannis with, you know, in terms of his handles and getting to the rim, but Towns can use his long strides, and he has a quicker first step than most of the guys that are guarding him, and he can overpower the smaller guys that guard him. Towns is, you know, in the conversation for the top two or three in the post, and also as a ball handler and distributor with the ball in his hands. You know, that's an area where obviously Nikola Jokic is a little bit better than Towns. But outside of Jokic, and obviously Giannis is a very different player, Towns is in that best, you know, two, three, four big men in the open floor, ball in his hands, and that's improved a lot this year as well. And we've talked a little bit about that on this podcast. The Hawks game in particular comes to mind. He had 8 assists in that game, 6 against the Spurs on Wednesday. And his turnovers have increased. That's just because he's had the ball in his hands more often. And that's okay. The turnovers are a little bit of a necessary evil for anybody that's going to have the ball in their hands more often. And for the Wolves, they'll take a couple extra turnovers a game if that means that Towns is touching the ball, you know, a dozen to 15 times more in a game than maybe he did in past seasons. But in terms of his shooting, back to that, before I go off on too many other tangents related to all the things that Towns is good at, he's shooting a hair under 9 threes per game, and he's shooting 44.4% from beyond the arc. He shot exactly 40% last year, 42.1% the year before. Coming into the season, he was a career 39.2% shooter from beyond the arc. He's already raised that 0.6% just with how many threes he's shooting and the clip he's shooting at this year. So if he shoots like this for another couple of weeks, he's going to be at 40% for his career as a 7-footer that plays almost primarily center and has been for the last few years. It's just insanity. One of the things that I mentioned on Wednesday, and I'm going to mention it again, but it's a tweet by Blake Holman that Jack put in his article the other day. There's no historical precedent for Karl-Anthony Towns. He listed the best non-Curry shooters in their best seasons versus Cat this year. So Ray Allen, Larry Bird, Reggie Miller, Dirk Nowitzki, and Klay Thompson, all of them, he listed their best shooting seasons. And again, this is not including Steph Curry, because Steph Curry he's Steph Curry. All of those guys, except for Ray Allen, shot 41 or 42% in their best statistical season. Ray Allen was at 38%. Ray Allen shot over 7 threes a game. Klay Thompson shot 8.3 threes per game. This was 3 years ago, the 16-17 season. Thompson shot a little over 8 threes a game at 41%. Towns is shooting 9 threes a game at 44%. Think about that. He's 7 feet tall. That's incredible. That's the level that he's shooting these threes at. And then he also, the other thing Blake listed in this tweet is, in the chart that he posted, was rebounds and assists per game, as well as points per game. And Towns has the most points, most rebounds per game easily on that list. And he's second in assists per game to only Larry Bird, more assists per game than Ray Allen in his best shooting season, more assists per game than Dirk, than Klay Thompson, Reggie Miller, all those guys. So all that to say, no matter how you slice it, Karl Anthony Towns is having a historical season. And yeah, we can say he's only played in 16 games. That's true. That matters. But 16 games isn't five games. And the way that they're using Towns, the way that he shot for his career, suggests that this is absolutely sustainable in every possible way. You know, he's not immune to a cold streak. I'm sure he'll have one, but that also means he'll probably have a hot streak at some point too. You look across the board at some of his other numbers and the things he's improved against himself year over year. He's only seen just a slight downtick in rebounding percentage, and that's mostly on the offensive glass. He's actually up a little bit year over year in defensive rebounding percentage, and that's clearly because he's spending more time on the perimeter and he's just around the rim less often to clean up teammates' misses. And so that's the primary reason for that. But he's had a few big offensive rebounds the last couple of games, so we'll see if that evens itself out a little bit. Believe it or not, his usage rate is actually down slightly, and that's because of his large uptick in assist rate. He's getting the ball on the perimeter more in situations where he is distributing and looking to pass. He's passing out of double teams when he does get double teamed in the post. And his steal rate's up as well. We mentioned the turnover rate being up, but that's to be expected. So all those things together mean that he's been significantly better so far this year than even where he ended last year. And granted, he had a slow start to last season, but he ended up an all-star, had that run in March where he almost made All-NBA. And this surpasses all of that. It surpasses 2 years ago when he had his best wire-to-wire season along with Jimmy Butler. And, you know, he was the Wolves. Towns of the Wolves' clear second offensive option that season. It was his lowest usage rate of his career was the full Jimmy Butler season when the team went to the playoffs. And this surpasses that. And they're also on pace to have not all, you know, they're not on pace for the 46 wins they had that season, but they're on pace to be in that, you know, low 40s win range, which isn't crazy far off of that. And TBD on what Wiggins is able to do the rest of the year as well. So, again, this is just kind of like Towns hasn't played. You know, he missed a couple games with the suspension. The team's only at, you know, it's almost a quarter pole. I think after they play Sunday, they'll be at about 25% of their games done or close to it. So this isn't like an official, here's Towns is having the best season ever or whatever. But I mean, it's an official, like everybody's on notice that this could very well be the best offensive season from a big man. It could make him the most unique and best offensive force for seven footers in this league's history. And that's not hyperbole if you look at the numbers and you look at what he's doing. Now, we might look back in a month or two if he goes through a couple cold stretches or there's some adversity that we don't see coming, and this might sound foolish, but it's absolutely a conversation that we need to start having, as does the national media as well. All right, before we preview Wolves Grizzlies for Sunday, did want to mention Audible. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. That's audible.com/lockedonNBA. If you're listening on the go and you can't visit Audible right now, perhaps you are doing some shopping this weekend, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcasts.com/offers. The Timberwolves host the Grizzlies at 2:30 p.m. on Sunday, so the rare matinee game at Target Center. I mentioned this earlier, but I do have some real concerns about the energy in the building as well as the energy for the Timberwolves. They haven't played well at home at all this year anyways, and then now you're adding on top of it a three-day break at home, Thanksgiving. Who knows what their practice schedule looks like right now, but you know, going back out on the road after the game for, I think it's a four-game road trip upcoming, it'd be really easy to kind of roll over in this one. Hopefully the Grizzlies are just as willing to do that. The Grizzlies, for their part, they've lost five straight games after winning three straight just prior to that, but they've lost to the Nuggets, Warriors, Lakers, at the Pacers and the Clippers. So all those teams except the Warriors are likely playoff teams. So it's not like they've been playing. It's not like they've had easy games, you know, consistently. They do have the Jazz on Friday evening. I'm recording this early on Friday, so they have the Jazz Black Friday night, and will have at least played a game in between. You know, they won't have had as long of a layoff as the Wolves. They're playing at home against the Jazz, so probably another loss for them, to be honest. And you know, if they come in with a 6-game losing streak, here's hoping that it's enough to really kind of you know, maybe they won't be into it on a Sunday afternoon after traveling late Friday. Maybe the Wolves will get lucky in that respect. since playing the Wolves last, remember the Grizzlies beat the Wolves back. It was like the seventh game of the year for the Timberwolves. The Grizzlies lost two, then won three, and then have lost five in a row since. So that means that they're, 3-7 since playing the Wolves last. That game when the Wolves lost to the Grizzlies last time around was the first game after the Shabazz Napier injury, and Jeff Teague, it was also the first game he missed due to illness. So the Wolves didn't have either one of their point guards. It was the first time they had faced that, and since then, Napier still hasn't played, and the Wolves have figured out essentially Jarrett Culver as the other point guard. Really, Andrew Wiggins is the other point guard, but both of those guys running the offense. In this game, the Wolves started Jarrett Culver and Josh Okogie, sent Travion Graham to the bench, and Jordan McLaughlin was called up and made his season debut. I've got to believe that having Teague replace McLaughlin's minutes is basically the difference in these two teams. Apologies to Jordan McLaughlin, but that's a huge difference. The Wolves gave up 137 points in regulation to the Grizzlies in this game. The Grizzlies had three quarters of 35 points or more. The Wolves' defense is just atrocious. That's something that hopefully, or it has largely corrected itself. The Wolves have actually been a pretty decent defensive team so far this year. So hopefully more Covington and Okogie minutes together on the floor at the same time. Travion Graham's been good on defense. And really the Wolves just have to figure out how to slow down Ja Morant. The problems the Wolves have had slowing down lead guards on other teams have been well documented on this podcast as well as other places. But Morant had 26 points on 19 shots last time these teams faced each other. He shot 10 free throws, making 8 of them. Dylan Brooks also had 31 on just 16 shots, was 5 of 7 from beyond the arc. So those are the two guys the Wolves need to focus in on slowing down. For the season, Dylan Brooks is shooting 37% from beyond the arc, but he's a little worse than that over his last 10 games. He's a hair under 35%. So that game was clearly an outlier for him. But that said, he got too many open looks, and I think the Wolves have buttoned up a lot of things in defense since then. And being at home, this is a game that the Wolves should ultimately win. It's a favorable matchup for them overall. And especially with Towns and Wiggins playing the way that they are, it's a game that they should be able to come away with a win, despite all the concerns that I've already mentioned related to Thanksgiving and turkey hangovers and the whole thing. So, I guess we'll see how that all shakes out. In terms of overall this season, the Grizzlies just haven't been very good on either end of the floor. They're 5-12 overall, so they're second to last in the Western Conference, ahead of just the Warriors, who they just recently lost to. But they're bottom five in offensive rating. They are 24th in defensive rating. They play fast in terms of their pace, but the biggest issue for them is just slowing down their opponents. And the Wolves should be able to have a field day. I mean, remember, even though the Wolves lost and gave up 137 the last time that they faced Memphis, the Wolves scored 121 themselves. And that was without having an actual point guard on the floor other than McLaughlin for 22 minutes. So expect the Andrew Wiggins-led first unit and the Jeff Teague-led second unit to do much better this time around. And this is a game that the Wolves should win by a couple of buckets. I would imagine at least that before they head back out on the road and things get a little more difficult again. The quick peek ahead at the schedule. We talked about this on Wednesday, or maybe it was Tuesday, one of the podcasts earlier this week. The Wolves haven't really had a difficult schedule to this point. I mean, they've played some good teams, but they haven't played the top tier of the Western Conference. That's going to change. They go to Memphis on Wednesday, then to Oklahoma City on Friday. At the Lakers is next Sunday evening, and then at Phoenix on Monday is a more winnable game, but that's the second half of a back-to-back on the road. So, and then after that, they head home to face Utah and the Clippers. So Lakers, Utah, and Clippers in a four-game stretch there at Dallas is no joke. They've been surprisingly awesome this year. So things are going to get a little more difficult. The Wolves sit at 10-8, and at least splitting this road trip after the Grizzlies game on Sunday would be huge. The Wolves are currently seventh in the West. They're right in between the Jazz and the Suns, and have an opportunity to gain a little bit of ground as they face Utah again next week too. So we'll be back on Monday morning with a recap and our takeaways from Sunday's game from Wolves Grizzlies, and then looking ahead to the rest of the week next week as well. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.